For the families of those still missing, it is an excruciating wait. Nearly a week after the building collapse in Surfside, Florida, 12 people are now confirmed dead. 149 are still missing.
Search and rescue teams recovered the remains of another victim of the building collapse yesterday. Daniela Levine Cava, the mayor of Miami-Dade County, says the teams haven't given up.
They are working throughout inclement weather. They're working as hard as they ever have, but they are able to make headway even in the face of all of those obstacles.
But officials leading the rescue mission are also asking the federal government to send a search team to give their workers some relief.
NPR's Greg Allen joins us now from Miami. Greg, we're now many days into the search and rescue effort. Do crews and families still have hope to find survivors?
Well, you know, talking to family members and also hearing from people who've been involved in the search and rescue operation, I think that at this point people are realistic, yet, you know, they are still trying to hold on to hope. Surfside Mayor Charles Burkett talks about other places like Haiti and Mexico City, where earthquake survivors were discovered a week later.
Nobody's giving up hope here. Nobody's stopping. The work goes on full force. We're dedicated to get everyone out of that pile of rubble and reunite them with their families.
Greg, I know you have spent some time talking with some of those families. What are they telling you?
Well, one family member told me that the worst thing after losing your loved one is the torture of not knowing what's going on. You know, and I think with that in mind, beginning last week, officials with the search and rescue teams have been privately briefing the families twice a day. But the search and rescue teams say these are some of the most difficult conditions they've ever faced. Typically, you know, these are teams, these urban search and rescue crews, they go through neighborhoods and into flooded or small collapsed buildings looking for survivors. But in Surfside, the crews are sifting and collecting tons of pulverized concrete from this massive pile. They're collecting any personal artifacts they find as they go, marking them with GPS. But searchers say they're finding very few voids or empty spaces in the rubble where someone might be able to survive. Here's Miami-Dade County Fire Chief Alan Kaminsky.
It's a methodical, very difficult process. You know, as we're removing debris, we're just finding more debris that's just concrete pulverized. You know, it's extremely difficult.
You know, the mound where rescuers are working is off limits to the media, but the Miami-Dade Fire Department released photos yesterday showing their operation. You see task force members using shovels and their hands to fill these 5-gallon buckets with crumbled concrete that are then kind of carried away. It's just a painfully slow process.
So at the same time, the investigation goes on, right? We're continuing to find out more about who may have known what about the deteriorating conditions of that building. What can you tell us?
Right. There are lots of questions about what the town's former top building official, Ross Prieto, knew, for example. He saw a 2018 report by an outside engineering firm that identified what it called major structural damage at the condo. But Prieto later told the condo association he thought the building was in, quote, very good shape. He stopped answering questions from the media. He has been working since leaving Surfside as a consultant with the city of Doral. But yesterday, the company that employs him said he's now taking a leave of absence. You know, that follows information we've also learned about a letter sent by the condo board president to residents in April that said fixing all the problems there would cost over $15 million. The most alarming part of the letter, the association president said problems with the concrete and corroded steel reinforcement had gotten worse since an engineering report in 2018, and residents were being asked to pay for those repairs.
NPR's Greg Allen reporting from Miami. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, the House will vote today on whether to create a select committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Yeah, Democrats are pursuing this plan as an alternative to a bipartisan outside commission that failed in the Senate last month. Here's Congressman Hakeem Jeffries from New York. He chairs the House Democratic Caucus.
The events of January 6th, what happened that fateful day, why it happened, and how do we prevent that type of violent assault on the Capitol, the Congress, and the Constitution from ever happening again.
But in a twist, some Republicans who supported the bipartisan commission say they'll vote against the select committee.
NPR congressional reporter Claudia Grisales is with us. Hey, Claudia.
Good morning, Rachel.
First off, just explain how this select committee would work.
It's structured like past select committees. It will have subpoena power, and it is split between the parties, but not evenly. It will have 13 members, 8 of those selected by Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and the remaining 5 from the Republican leader in the House, Kevin McCarthy, with, quote, consultation from the Speaker. That split favoring Democrats has some former GOP supporters of the bipartisan commission saying they'll vote against the select committee. This includes a House Republican who brokered the deal to come up with that outside commission plan, John Katko. In addition, Speaker Pelosi has said she could use one of her picks to choose a Republican. And one name on many lists is Liz Cheney. This is the Wyoming representative who was recently ousted from her House leadership role by party leaders. And Cheney herself hasn't ruled out the possibility.
Which would obviously be a controversial pick. What kind of pressure does this place on Kevin McCarthy when it comes to the Republicans that he might choose to serve on the panel?
Right. This does put McCarthy in a tricky position. We've heard anyone from Cheney to Adam Kinzinger of Illinois to one of the party's more controversial members, Georgia's Marjorie Taylor Greene, signal interest in serving. That said, Republican leaders, like Democrats, have kept their plans close to the vest on who they'll name. Meanwhile, GOP leaders such as House Minority Whip Steve Scalise are still attacking the idea of this panel, saying Pelosi should focus instead on existing congressional committee investigations into the attack. Now, we should note Pelosi says because the minority leader will consult the speaker on his 5 appointments, it's possible she could even veto McCarthy's choices. Now, this language to consult the speaker was also used for the Republican-led select committee to investigate the 2012 terrorist attack into Benghazi, but it's another reminder of the partisan times we're living in.
But Claudia, Republicans had to know they were going to face this more partisan route if they blocked the original commission, right?
Yeah, they did, and now they do. This comes more than a month after Senate Republicans blocked a move to take up legislation creating this bipartisan 9/11-style commission to investigate the deadly riot. And Pelosi had already warned she may take this step for a select committee if that effort failed. And now Republicans could face the prospect of this committee rolling out its findings close to the midterm elections, which is something that the GOP was hoping to avoid. So all of this could make for a more lopsided vote today. Previously, 35 Republicans joined House Democrats to approve that outside commission plan. But today, that number could fall, with Katko and others already warning they are voting no.
NPR congressional reporter Claudia Grisales, we appreciate you. Thanks, Claudia.
Thank you much.
All right, so today President Biden is going to meet with governors from Western states to lay out how the federal government will handle wildfires this summer.
There's real urgency to this meeting. We're expecting another very dangerous wildfire season. At the moment, there are record-breaking high temperatures in the Pacific Northwest. Now, climate change has been at the center of Biden's infrastructure agenda, but progressives are worried his agenda is changing.
NPR White House correspondent Scott Detrow is with us this morning. Hey, Scott.
Good morning.
So what stands out to you about this meeting today with Western governors?
You know, this is the type of briefing on wildfire preparation that's typical at the start of a hurricane season. And that fact is an acknowledgement that warming climates are leading to longer and more intense wildfire seasons. The president is expected to announce a few steps today to help Western states and firefighters who are going to be dealing with this. And that includes short-term efforts to boost pay through bonuses for federal firefighters, extending the seasonal hiring window since the season just keeps getting longer. And the president's also going to announce an effort to train more federal workers and military personnel to respond to wildfires.
So as Noel noted, some climate activists have not been too pleased with the Biden administration in recent days. Can you explain that dynamic?
Yeah, it's mostly because, go back to the spring, the president rolled out an infrastructure plan that included historic major climate proposals. Biden insisted climate change was a key part of how he defined infrastructure. And then when that bipartisan infrastructure deal came together, most of those climate policies got really whittled down or taken out of the bill. The White House is pointing out there is still money in this package for climate. That includes money spurring electric vehicle purchases, 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations across the country, also funding to find and cap abandoned oil and gas wells, which really actually are a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. The White House keeps saying this is a down payment, as they put it, and that Biden is going to press for all of that earlier stuff in that reconciliation spending bill that Senate rules would allow to pass on party lines. But with record heat waves, activists are saying, you know what? I'm tired of down payments. It's overdue for the broad action the White House was initially talking about.
And they've been pressuring Biden.
Absolutely. And just one example of that, the Sunrise Movement, we hear a lot about them. It's a high-profile climate advocacy group that's made up mostly of young people. They work with the White House on policy and a lot of things. But earlier this week, there were members protesting outside the White House holding up signs and calling Biden, quote, a coward. So John Paul Mejia is an 18-year-old from Miami, a spokesman for Sunrise, and his point was that Democrats are in charge in D.C. and they should push forward with their priorities.
There should be no compromises, no excuses. We have a Democratic rule right now in D.C. and we should be using that.
You know, that's not to say they're not still allies, but a lot of climate advocates and groups are saying they're just trying to keep up the pressure and hold Biden to the promises he made earlier this year.
Are there specific measures that they're looking to push?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the things that Biden was originally talking about, just to mention two really important ones, according to environmental groups, a clean energy standard, which would mandate that fast shift to clean energy production, and 10-year clean energy tax credits to really give incentive to build more wind and solar.
All right, NPR White House correspondent Scott Detrow. Scott, thanks. We appreciate it.
Sure thing.